In Olive. We're in the middle of discussing the subject that we saw last time. Let's just sum up where we were holding. The Gemara presented Moshe's question to Hashem. Moshe tells Hashem, I want to understand your ways. And the Gemara construed that to mean that he was asking the classic question. Why do some righteous have it good while some righteous suffer? Why do some wicked have it good while some wicked suffer? The Gemara's first answer was, well, it depends who your father was. A suffering tzaddik is a tzaddik, the son of a rasha. A tzaddik who has it good is a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik. A rasha who has it good is the rasha, the son of a tzaddik. A suffering rasha is the rasha, the son of a rasha. Now the Gemara rejected that, as we saw, because there is a principle that sons are not punished for their father's misdeeds unless they continue in their father's ways. So the tzaddik, the son of a rasha, should not be punished for his father's deeds. He shouldn't be suffering because of his father. Then the Gemara went on and gave a very broad answer that it depends if he's a complete tzaddik or not a complete tzaddik. And by rasha, it depends if you're a complete rasha or not a complete rasha. Okay, very broad, general. Yeah, got a whole row waiting for you. Very broad, general answer. So we began discussing it the other day. Now I just want to go back and give a few more takes on this. First of all, we have to understand that the Gemara departed from the tzaddik ben tzaddik, tzaddik ben rasha, because of the argument that it can't be that a tzaddik would be punished for his father's misdeeds. But the other aspect, that a rasha ben tzaddik might have it good, whereas a rasha ben rasha might have it bad, that the Gemara didn't necessarily reject. So I just want to note that the Ikarim makes a big principle out of this. He broadens this concept. He says that the idea that we say that a rasha ben tzaddik has it good is really representative of a very broad category of Rishayim will have it good. And that is rasha ben tzaddik. In other words, what the Gemara is saying, you're right, you might not be deserving, but you might have a good life nevertheless. A rasha might have a good life nevertheless because of other people, because his father deserved to see his child having a good life. So really the current says this is really representative just of the general concept. It's one example of the general category that a rasha might have things good because of other people, nothing to do with his personal cheshbon. That extends a lot further. One basic example is if his father was a tzaddik, and it was decreed upon his father that the next three generations will have it good. That's one example. But there are many other manifestations of this. For example, another simple example. A rasha might be wealthy because he has a son who's going to be a tzaddik and needs to inherit him. I mean, it could be all kinds of reasons that are not connected to the person himself that might become closer. That are not connected to the person himself that can cause him to have a good life nevertheless. Another example of this is a rasha might have wealth because he needs to affect people in other ways. One example, the Ikarim says, so that people will wonder, why does a rasha have it good? That's the reason why a rasha might have it good. People will wonder, why does a rasha have it good? And that provides a test for people. People to see, will you be misled to say that it's okay to misbehave? In fact, you look at the last parak of Malachi, the last nevuah that we have. The last nevuah that we have is full of that. It says that at the end of days, people are going to struggle with this phenomenon. Why do we see that people can challenge Hashem and get away with it, while we, who are remaining loyal, are not prospering? So that itself is a reason for a rasha to have it good, to test others. Well, they did. It's going to be especially prevalent in the end of days. Yirmiyahu was already, Moshe was already asking a question. You were going to say something? No. So, it's a general concept that yes, a Rasha might have it good not because of any merit of his own, but because he's meant to affect people in other ways. General concept. Okay. Now, just one other point that I want to make from the Ikarim is that at the end of the day, after we learned the whole sugya of Yisurim Shalava, and after we learned this sugya, we saw all kinds of good reason why a tzaddik might not have it good, and why a Rasha might yes have it good. At the end of the day, why do we find that this question was so much bothering Nevi'im and Tzaddikim? All throughout Tanakh we find this question being asked. Yirmiyahu asks the question, etc. So the Ikarim makes just another profound point on this, just to understand why it was bothering them so much. He says they certainly were as great philosophers as we are. Yirmiyahu knew everything that it says in the Ikarim. He knew everything in Maran Avuchim. He knew all the philosophy that was later developed. Why were they so bothered by the question? So he says they were bothered by the question for two reasons. First of all, he says they were just pained by the fact that at the end of the day it causes Chilul Hashem. Yes, we know all the reasons, etc., etc., but they were pained by the Chilul Hashem. What? Chilul Hashem caused by the impression that people get by seeing Rishayim prospering and Tzaddikim suffering. Yeah? So they were pained by that and they expressed that. Yeah, on the surface. And moreover, the Ikarim says, and this is just a fundamental principle in general in understanding much of Tanakh, he says they spoke what they felt. And often a person understands that something needs to be a certain way, but it still hurts. For example, let's say a person understands that a certain medical procedure is best for him. Does that mean that he won't cry out? Painful medical procedure. Does it mean that he won't cry out, that he won't groan while it's going on? He groans. Now, the great people of yesteryear did all their groaning to Hashem. Any groan was directed to Hashem. And therefore, yes, they understood it all. But yet, it hurt, and therefore they expressed it to Hashem. But not to say that they didn't understand everything that we were explaining. They understood all the philosophy too. Yeah, it's all the same shot. Yeah, two facets of the same shot. Okay, we'll move on. Yeah.
So instead of criticizing this woman for almost being blasphemous, he said this woman believed in Hashem. She knew where to direct.
Right. Now, a higher level is to know how to relate to Hashem also. But it's certainly a higher level than a woman who doesn't connect it to Hashem at all. That's right. Okay. Now we move on. We're in the Gemara, Zayin Amud Aleph, 2, 4, 6, 8. 10 lines up from the bottom, right in the middle of the line, it says, Upliga. Our Gemara concluded that Moshe asked Hashem, I want to understand your ways, and Hashem granted it to him. In the ways that we've seen here, Hashem explained it to him. Upliga de Rav Meir. Now, this understanding that Hashem granted it to him goes against Rabbi Meir. Da'omar Rabbi Meir, Shtayim Nasnulo. Rabbi Meir says no. Two of Moshe's requests were granted, right? Remember we saw the other day? And Moshe requested three things. He requested that the Shechina should rest upon Klal Yisrael, that it should not rest on other nations, and that Hashem should inform him of his ways. So, according to the previous pshat, all three requests were granted. Now, Rameh says, no, that's not so. Shtayim nasnulay. The first two were granted. The Shechina rested on Klal Yisrael exclusively. That, yes. The achas loy nasnulay. But, the last question, the last request was not granted. Hashem did not explain to him how he works. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk there, Vechanoisi is asher achoin. I will grace who I will grace. Verichanti, sorry, apapi sheinoi hogun. Even if he's not deserving. Verichanti es asher achem, and I will have mercy upon whom I will have mercy. Apapi sheinoi hogun. Even though he's not deserving. Meaning, no, This is not something I'm going to explain. There are deeper reasons than you can understand, than I want you to understand. And yes, I grace who I grace, and I have mercy upon who I have mercy, and that's that. Moshe asked, tell me your ways. Chazal understood that he was actually asking this question. Well, we'll see soon that maybe he was. But Chazal had a tradition that this is what he was asking. He was asking, they considered this one of the most fundamental questions that bother people. Why would it be that the righteous would suffer and that the wicked would prosper?
Do you have Amir agree with this?
What? Aramir agrees that was his question. But he says that Hashem didn't give him an answer. At the end of the day, we don't know the answer. Okay. Now, Vayoyme. Now, we take this discussion a little further. We're continuing to study those psukim there, where Moshe asked Hashem, Hoydeini noiz rochecho ve'edoacho lemanin tzochem be'inecho. Please tell me your ways, so that I can know you better, and I can please you better. Vayoyme. And Hashem said, you cannot see my face. Meaning, you see a person's face, you learn who they are. In other words, Moshe wanted to understand Hashem better than he did. And Hashem saying, no, you cannot see my face. There are things about me that will remain concealed. Tanat Nishmeid Rabbi Yishua ben Korcha. Raisa says, in the name of Rabbi Yishua ben Korcha, Kach Omar LaHakadosh Baruch Hu LaMoshe. Moshe asked, let me get to know you better. Let me see you better. Hashem said, no. What was he actually telling him? What he was telling him was as follows. Kisherotzisi loyrotzisi. There was an earlier time in your life when I wanted to show you my glory. When I wanted, you didn't want. When was that? Back by the snet. By the snet, Moshe had a vision. And he turned his face away. So you didn't want to see when I wanted you to see. Achshav sha'ato roitze, you missed the opportunity. Now that you want to see, eini roitze, I don't want to see. I don't want you to see.
So why did he hide his face?
Well, let's see. We'll finish the discussion. We'll see. Now, so in other words, we're seeing here that Moshe has been criticized for not having looked when he was granted the opportunity. Now this conflicts with Rabbi Shmuel Ban Achmeni, the fact that Moshe is being criticized. That's for sure what he meant. And yet Hashem was saying, you made the wrong call. If I was showing you, you should have looked. Moshe definitely looked away because out of reverence. But Hashem was telling him, you made the wrong call.
Hashem should have said, it's okay.
Well, let's see. This Tana holds otherwise. Someone else might agree with you. But this Tana holds that no, Moshe was granted an opportunity, he should have seized the opportunity. Now, Opligid Rabbi Shmuel Ban Achmeni. But this conflict with Rabbi Shmuel Ban Achmeni, he said exactly the opposite, what you're saying. Tomer Rabbi Shmuel Ban Achmeni, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yenasan, the opposite. Bischar Sholosh, Zochal Sholosh. In reward for three things, Moshe merited three things. Back there by the snare. In reward for the pasuk that says, and Moshe hid his face, zochali cluster upon him. Because he hid his face, he merited that his face shone later in life. And in reward for his, it says, Moshe hid his face because he was scared to look upon Hashem. So, Bitzchar for hiding his face later shone. Bitzchar ki yorei, Bitzchar because he was afraid, Zocho levayiru megeshes elo. He later reached the level where, merited the level where other people were so awed of him they were scared to approach him. Bitzchar mehabit, because, it says, he was scared to look, Zocho, he ultimately merited that, Utmunas Hashem Yabit, that he sees, so to speak, the image of Hashem. So we have a very fundamental machloikis here. Moshe was shown a very deep vision, opportunity to see very great things, he turned away because of his awe, out of reverence. According to the first pshat, he was taken to test. He shouldn't have. It was a missed opportunity. According to the other pshat, on the contrary, he was praised for it, and he was rewarded for it. The truth is that there's an element of truth to both. Meaning, there are, this is not necessarily a conflict. Well, not necessarily a head-on conflict, but a conflict that we always have to be juggling with the whole time.
How would the other
now, they're saying now he was already closer to Hashem, and he wanted to see now. Now he felt like he was ready. And Hashem said, no, you missed the opportunity. Now, the truth is that there's... What's that?
How was... Is that what the Pshat would say?
If Hashem is showing you something, look, that's what the previous Pshat says. If I'm telling you to look, it's not Derech Eretz to refuse. I don't want to spend too much time back and forth on it. That's the understanding. Two opinions, you're right according to one opinion, try to understand the other opinion too.
Yeah. Right? And that's the whole concept, is that we will not, cannot ever understand the issue up front, but in retrospect we'll be able to see it in the back after it's happened.
Ah, that's an interesting take.
You know, later on,
I hear that. I don't want to spend too much time, but that's an interesting shot. I never saw that. You're saying that when they pass, I'll see your back, meaning in retrospect.
Yeah,
interesting.
We see the like a needle point to the backside of it, all little ends and ends, nothing makes sense.
Interesting.
You turn over, then you see it. That's how we'll see
interesting.
It.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeshakaya. Okay. So the truth is that this really represents a general struggle, that a conflict that we have to basically spend our lives juggling. On the one hand, we want to get as close to Hashem as we can. On the other hand, you have to know to maintain a respectful distance. Right? That's Har Sinai. What happened at Har Sinai? Hashem put a gate. Can't come closer than this. Our whole life is about getting closer to Hashem. But while you're getting as close as you can possibly get, you still want to remember that getting close to Hashem is a serious business and you must maintain awe. For example, you can't feel. You have to know that Hashem loves you more than anybody ever loved you. But that doesn't give any room for slack around Him. You can't figure, okay, Hashem and I are already very close. So, okay, He can handle it if I take this easy or take that easy. There's no such thing. The closer you get, the more you have to be on your toes. And we're talking about someone like Moshe at this level. Let's note, Moshe was not ordered to look. It was really a judgment call. Moshe was seeing something that he felt was way above his level. It wasn't appropriate for him to be seeing. And the question is, do you take the opportunity to grow closer, or do you show your reverence by standing back? Tough call. Each Amayra is bringing out a true element of this struggle. This is in general, a very fundamental element of our whole career of getting close to Hashem. On the one hand, trying to feel as close as we possibly can, while on the other hand, maintaining that awe and trepidation of being close. That's really what the concept of Kavod is bringing together. Ava and Yira. Kavod is where Ava and Yira meet. What's Kavod? Yira is fear. If you're just scared of somebody or something, you keep away. Ava, if you love, you just dive forward. What happens when there's both? When you understand the magnitude of what you're dealing with, you have to be walking on eggshells. While at the same time, you want to be as close as you can. That's where Kavod comes in. Yes, you approach, but with a respectful distance. What's that? That's why you can't get too close. Well, with Hashem, it doesn't work that way. As close as you get doesn't breed contempt, but I don't want to spend too much time on it, but the issue is more that you always, Yira is a very fundamental element of our relationship with Hashem. What's that? This week's parsha, how's that? This whole parsha, that's right. Okay. Just just one last point on the concept of tzaddik, of the machloikis, right? We saw machloikis whether Moshe was actually told Hashem's ways when it comes to tzaddik virali, etc., or not. Moshe said tzaddik gomu, tzaddik sheinoi gomu, right? It depends where he's holding. Rav Dessler said that here also we have to understand when the Gemara gives one pshat that Moshe was given the means of understanding it, and another pshat that Moshe was not given the means of understanding it, that also, Rav Dessler says in general, when the Gemara uses the terms upliga, this conflicts with, it's actually hinting that on the surface it's a machloikis. But on the deeper level, two elements are being brought out, each of which are true. So, when we have this machloikis, whether Moshe was actually informed of how Hashem's ways work, really, there are two aspects in when, let's say Yisurim, for example. Sometimes Yisurim are about training a person. About training a person, about getting, waking a person up, about improving him, etc., etc. That's always said often, if a person gets the point, gets the message, improves, the Yisurim may go away. Also, Rabbi Avigdor Miller's fundamental point that he always used to yell, by crying out, Hashem sometimes will bring misfortune upon a person to cause him to cry out to Hashem. A person can so many times avoid that by crying out before the misfortune comes. He can also cry out in happiness. It's a very, very fundamental principle. But that's all one level. There's another level where it is just, has nothing to do with a person's actions. A person's inherent function in this world is to serve Hashem through poverty. That's what's been planned since the beginning of creation. Why? Because that's his share in Kvod Shamayim. Kvod Shamayim, we're all here. All billion of us, Jews in history, are here. Each of us provides a different facet of Kvod Shamayim. Each of us is Mekayim the Torah in a way that nobody else ever was and ever will be. Why? Because nobody was ever challenged with fulfilling the Torah in your precise circumstances, with your personality, with your tests, and therefore each of us provides a very, very unique Torah for Hashem. We each present Hashem with a different Torah. The rules are the same for everybody, but yet at the end of the day, the fulfilled Torah that we show Hashem is very different. Each person. Each person had different things that they had to overcome. Each person had different tests. Every person is a once-in-history creation. Now, therefore, different people are put into different situations. One person is born without siblings. The other person is born with 16 annoying siblings. Each has its test. Poverty is a test, and wealth is a test. Illness is a test, and health is a test. Everything is a test. And when you start breaking down people's lives, everybody has a whole different set of tests. So therefore, yes, some people's inherent tafkid is to serve Hashem through poverty, to serve Hashem through suffering, because that's the kvod shamayim that they're bringing. That can't change. Doesn't matter how much the person improves, because it's not an issue of improving. His function is to serve Hashem loyally through it all. That was the facet that Hashem was saying, I'll grace who I'll grace, and have mercy upon whom I have mercy. Some people, it's an issue of just setting them back on track. But by some people, that's just how it is. That's their function. So now the question is, so why does one person have the function of serving Hashem in poverty and the other person has the function of serving Hashem through prosperity? That's what Hashem is saying. That I have my reasons for, that simply cannot be understood in this world. That's what we say, I grace while grace. There's no understanding of that. That's above the above human comprehension in this world. Why one person was giving this share and the other person was given that share. Okay, that's why, for example, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, Shimshon Pinkas said that this is one of his favorite Gemaras. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas was a destitute person, lived his life in extreme poverty. One day he had to let blood. That was a standard medical procedure in those days. They let blood. Now, after letting blood, you have to have a hearty meal. Otherwise, it's dangerous. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas had to let blood. Had nothing to eat at home. The only thing he had at home was the spine of a garlic. You know, like when you have a garlic, you have the cloves around the spine in between, which is really nothing. That was all he had at home. That was what he ate. That was his meal after letting blood. He fainted. So the Talmidim showed up on the scene while they were working to revive him, to wake him up. He was lying there unconscious on the floor. They saw that he laughed and that he cried. And then they saw sparks shooting out of his face. This is what they saw while he was lying there unconscious. When they finally woke him up, they asked him what was going on. So he said, I fainted when I was passing out. I actually had a vision. And I said to Hashem, how much longer am I going to continue suffering like this? So Hashem said, that's your gzeirah. So Elazar ben Pedas said, is there nothing to do about it? So Hashem said, you know what? There might be, Hashem said. There might be. I'll redo the entire world from Bereshis. Hashem was offering this in a serious way. I'll redo the entire world from Bereshis. We'll start it all again. And maybe it'll come out different. And this was a serious offer. Hashem said, should I push the button? Reset? So Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas said, well, am I more than halfway through my life or not? And Hashem answered, you are. So Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas said, that's when you saw me crying. Then Hashem said, no, so don't redo it. So Hashem told him, but rest assured, when you come to Olam Haba, you have 13 rivers of balsam oil waiting for you. That's obviously representing higher concepts. 13 rivers of balsam oil, something very luxurious in our time. Small bottle costed who knows how much. So the Elazar ben Pedas said, 13? I want more! So Hashem said, 13 isn't enough! So the Elazar ben Pedas says, well, am I asking of someone who doesn't have? So Hashem says, Hashem like smacked him affectionately. Said, no, don't talk like that. So it said that, he hit my face with a pulse of denura, with like a little beam of fire, in an affectionate way. He said, that's when he saw sparks shooting out of my face. That was the closest of Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas with Hashem. Whatever it is, this is a fundamental point being brought out here. What's being brought out here? That, yes, there's such a thing as a person who, it's been planned since Bereshis that this is this person's role. That's got nothing to do with his behavior, and there's no way of changing that. So we have to understand that at the end of the day, we can understand certain rationales for why the righteous might suffer, but there will be instances where you simply can't know. That's his chelek, and that's that. Okay, we'll move on. Now we're continuing that discussion. This is the pasuk that you quoted before. Hashem told Moshe, asked, I want to see Hashem. And as you quoted, Hashem told him, no one can see my face while they're alive. But what I'll do is like this. Well, this is probably possibly the most cryptic psukim in the Torah. I mean, in a narrative. Right? We have more cryptic psukim in Parshas Ha'azinu. But in a narrative, Hashem tells Moshe, you can't see my face. So here's what I'm going to do. You stand in a niche in the rock, Har Sinai. I'm going to cover it with my palm so you don't see me passing. I'll pass by. Then I'll take my palm off and you'll be able to see my back. The back of my head, but you won't see my face. Maybe arguably the most cryptic narrative in the Torah.
It is cryptic.
What?
It's cryptic.
Unclear. So Hashem tells him, "Vasroisis kapai, I will remove my hand, and you'll see my back." Omer Abchane bar Bizne, Omer Abishimin Chasida, Melamed. What does this mean? So Chazal, they take away the crypticness; they make it very, very clear. Melamed sheir Hakadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe kesher shel tefillin. This means that Hashem showed Moshe the knot on the back of the tefillin. We couldn't understand what this pasuk means. Now Chazal come and make it very clear. Hashem showed in the back of his tefillin. Now we understand exactly what happened there. You still don't understand it. What?
You still didn't see the tefillin itself.
Oh, you didn't see the tefillin? And also, what exactly does that mean?
But it shows that Hashem wasn't wearing tarsha over the cup.
What's that? Well, not necessarily. It's possible that Hashem's talis is see-through. You have to figure that out.
Okay.
But
learned the document that Hashem was
filling. Oh, we just learned that Hashem was filling, and here we're seeing the Gemara put an emphasis on the back of the filling. The front of the filling, he didn't show Moshe. But the back of the filling, he could see. What does that mean? So here, of course, there are among the Rishonim who really want to just really make this simple, and they say it doesn't mean that Hashem showed him his tefillin. There's nothing to see. It simply means that Hashem showed Moshe how you make the knot in the back of the tefillin. The Rashba says, no, maybe that's what the Rashba says, but he says, but in light of the Gemara that we just saw before, that Hashem wears tefillin, and there it talks about the parshias that Hashem wears inside his tefillin. Apparently there is really tefillin that Hashem wears. And if so, the Rashba says, there's no reason not to explain that here it's actually referring. However, we're to understand those tefillin. Yes, this is referring to the knot in the back of Hashem's tefillin. So what's being stated here? So the Rashba, as usual, says that really these are esoteric secrets, but yet he gives us a little bit of a glimpse into what's going on here. What's being stated here? So, okay, if we'll talk in a little bit vague terms, the whole concept really, well, our whole purpose in this world is getting to know Hashem better and better. Once you're a Kabbalist, that's really what the whole study of Kabbalah is about. Higher and higher levels of understanding Hashem's revelation. To put it into words without properly understanding them, is that the Hashem that we know in this world, so to speak, is really the lowest level of how He reveals Himself. The Hashem that we know, there's really a much more spiritual level on top of that, and a spiritual level on top of that, etc., etc. And the Kabbalists are busy studying this. They understand. Now, therefore, for example, I think we spoke about this. You'll find in Midrashim and in different Sfarim where they get into what they call the Shiur Kaima. The Shiur Kaima, the structure, Kiviyachol, of Hashem. It's a very, very big theme in Kabbalah. Even Shiur, yeah, with an ayin. The structure of Hashem, so to speak. So Pesukim and Chumash that talk about the Yad Hashem and the Ein Hashem can all be dismissed as metaphors. But in the Sfarim that deal with these things, you see that no, they made a very big deal of understanding the structure, and they actually say how every limb of our body corresponds to a spiritual limb, kibiyachol, that Hashem has on a much higher level. The spheres, right? We know that Hashem reveals Himself through what we call spheres. Probably everybody heard of the concept, even if you don't understand it, right? At the end, after Sfiras HaOmer, you see, right? In Sfiras HaOmer, Chesed Shebegvurah, Gvurah Shebechesed. There are 10 spheres through which Hashem reveals Himself, through which we relate to Hashem. Those spheres actually represent body parts, Kiviyachol. The top three is Chachma, Bina, Das, represent the head, Kiviyachol. Then there are the middle three, Chesed, Gvurah, Tiferes. Chesed is the right arm, Gvur is the left arm, Tiferes is the chest, Kiviyachol. And then they have the bottom three, Netzach, Hod, Yesod. Those represent, so to speak, the right leg, the left leg, and what's in between. And when you go, and in the literature, in Kabbalistic literature, it gets much deeper than this. They mamish get into the fine elements of the hairs, etc., etc. These are all spiritual concepts. These all represent spiritual concepts. What's that? Malchus is the nekeva, which is called a part of the body, but it's already beyond. So, okay, we're getting a little deep here, but I'm doing this for a purpose. We have to understand, appreciate what we're dealing with when we start dealing with Hashem. Now, these are things that the Kabbalists study at very, very, very many different levels. The deeper level, the deeper level. Each element of this, so to speak, that spiritual arm, kiviyachol, has the pnimius of it. The arm, the deeper level of the arm that's even more spiritual. And the deeper level of the arm that's even more spiritual. And the deeper level of the arm that's even more spiritual. But it's from that that all of existence ultimately develops. Now, at the end of the day, I heard people make big mistakes with this. There's a good reason to discuss this just now, because everybody's likely to encounter these concepts at some point along the way. So I remember hearing somebody sitting in shul, here in town, person who apparently dabbled in Kabbalah, maybe he took a Kabbalah course, and plenty of them available, yeah, and he was saying that the Rambam, who wasn't exposed to Kabbalah, was wrong when he said that one of the fundamentals of our faith is that Hashem has no form or image. Because in Kabbalah, we know that he does. Okay, so he did away with one of the 13 Ikarim. Now, if for whatever reason this person is wrong, he, according to the Rambam, is an apikoiris. Let's just note that. And that's why it's so dangerous to start dabbling in these things without the right instruction. Now, he is wrong. I'm not going to complete the next half of the sentence. He is wrong. Because the Sfarim stress, Nefesh HaChaim discusses this ba'arichus, the Ben Ish Chai discusses this at length, that even all of this talk are just elements of his revelation, but at the end of the day, Hashem himself, nobody has any concept of whatsoever. None of these things are applicable there. Once we get to the essence, what they call Atzmuso Yisbarach, all these different things that we discuss, which are very, very deep and spiritual, are things that at the end of the day he caused to come into existence, and he operates through them, and that's how we relate to him. But, and that's what we talk about, the Yad Hashem. But at the end of the day, these are things that he initiated. They are not him. They're not him. And therefore, yes, the Rambam knew what he was, at the end of the day, the Rambam knew what he was talking about. When he put down the 13 Ikarim, he was guided by Ruach HaKodesh, regardless of what he was exposed to and what he wasn't exposed to. You're referring to the Ravid. Yitzchak is asking.
No, I think this probably told.
1 minute. The Ravid says that there were people who did believe that. Now, the Ravid himself didn't. He was just saying that if people did, they're not a Pikosin. So, no. The Kesef Mishnah there already explains that the Rambam also didn't mean to say that if a person simply took the Torah, analyzed the Torah, this is what he came away with, that he's an apikoyos. That's not what he meant. He meant that at the end of the day, a person who insists that it can't be that Hashem has no form, it can't be that someone would be above a form, he's an apikoyos. But if a person only had was chumash, he wasn't exposed to these deeper teachings, and he read Yad Hashem, so he imagined that there is. So? Possibly, but we don't need to, because at the end of the day, all the Sfarim will deal with these things, meaning the fundamental Sfarim that deal with these things, and Nefesh HaChaim stresses this at great length, stresses that at the end of the day, any talk about any element that we know about of Hashem is on the level of his revelation to us, but not on the level of his essence. His essence is completely unknown, completely be above anything anybody has ever discussed. That's the Ben Ish Chai also has a long preface before he starts discussing some of these inyanim. Warning, everything we discuss, he reiterates again and again and again, everything we discuss is just things that he brought into being for his purposes, not his essence. It's most fundamental before approaching these subjects. And that's actually what's being expressed here. The Rashba says.
Sorry for all the interruption. Could you just clarify for me, because the Ravid statement about someone who errs but it's acceptable, it's an acceptable mistake. I didn't quite understand what the mistake was. That was acceptable.
The Ravid says that if a person was not exposed to these teachings and he looked in the Torah and saw Yad Hashem, and therefore he construed that there is some sort of hand up there, we won't deem him an apikoros, even though he is very wrong. Even though he's very wrong, we won't deem him an apikoros if it was an innocent mistake. That's what the Ravid says.
Is there ever an opportunity after this world that we get a real revelation of what Hashem looks like, or after, or like, in other words, an olam haba?
I don't know. About that, the pasuk says, "Ayin le'irasa le'kim zolascho yasa le'machakeloi." Only Hashem knows exactly what's going to be there. Now, whatever it is, the Ravid says that that's actually being, the Rashbam, sorry, says that that's what's being expressed in our Gemara. Our Gemara is saying as follows. Sometimes you can recognize, you're going to say something?
What was the Rambam based in his
time? What's that?
That the Rambam made it one of the Torah, and what was he basing it on?
He was basing it on his understanding of Kol HaTorah Kula. Like, I don't know what its sources were. I don't know. No, he didn't take it out of a hat, but it doesn't mean that we know. He construed it from Sukkim, let's say, Shama lecho shmo nafshecha moed, ki lo isa kol tmuna, etc., etc. There are plenty of psukim that make it clear that at the end of the day there is no form. Who can you compare me to? Who can you give me any likeness to? I'm just quoting a few psukim off the top of my head. But the Rambam didn't draw his conclusions from the psukim that I'm quoting off the top of my head. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, when you take the full picture into perspective, you'll see plenty of other psukim that clearly conflict with these impressions that there are bodily parts or whatever it is. Now, mita damyuni veshve means I have no likeness, no element of likeness to anything at all. Even though we say that we're tzelem elikim, and that we correspond, our body corresponds kiviyachol. So, truth is that yes, Hashem reveals Himself in one way, but still, at the end of the day, His essence remains unknown. That's Michtav Melayo invokes the term that's used in these foreign. Reisha delo yisyada, the head that's never revealed. Meaning, if we're going to talk in terms of the Shir Kaima we discussed, you can really only get as high as the arms level. The head you can never reach. Meaning, even when a person learns deeper and deeper and he gets above the arms level, kiviyachol, okay, he sees that now that he got above the arms level, he says that what he previously perceived as above that level is actually just the higher level of that level. And the level he thought he was getting to is yet beyond. Okay. We went certainly beyond our scope, and the truth is beyond my capabilities in this discussion. But it's really just in order to bring home the point that the Rashi says about this Gemara. So what's being stated is as follows. You can identify a person by seeing their back. Right? If you know a person, even if you don't know who knows how well, probably most people in this shir I can identify by seeing from their back. Right? Yeah, you can get to know a person pretty well. Just from his back. Can be familiar enough with the way a person looks from the back. But is that comparative at all to knowing the person's face? Or is it comparative at all to seeing his face when you're dealing with him, seeing his expressions, what's going on? So Hashem is telling Moshe, you can see my back. Meaning, the most you'll ever get to know Hashem, as clear of a picture as you have, it's you always have to relate to it on the level of, so I now am very familiar with what this person's back looks like. And you have to always remember the qualitative difference between perceiving a person's back and perceiving his face. So the Rashba says, how does tefillin work? Is the tefillin with the parshiyus in it, which is the essence of the tefillin. That's at the front. Then it comes around to the back. There's the knot there. From the knot, the two straps drop down over your body. This is, we know that all of existence radiates from that original source, Hashem. Everything that we can ever perceive that our existence radiates from, that our existence, any origin that we can ever perceive of our existence, as high a level as you get, you have to realize what you're seeing is the knot where the two straps are falling from. You're not seeing the front. So, yeah, as deep as you go and as great a mekubal as you become, you get more and more familiar, you get closer and closer to the original source. What is the original source? What is the perceivable original source? It's that knot at the back. It's the back. You don't actually see the real parshiyus, you don't see the face, you're seeing the back. This is fundamental. The truth is, it was worth this whole arichas, even though I really didn't know what I was talking about, just in order for us to proceed with caution, because everybody at some point stumbles across books that will deal with this, found that will deal with this, more authoritative, less authoritative, and it's very fundamental to understand this little preface when you do read any of this material, especially since sometimes you can deal with Sfarim that will stress all this at some point in the Sefer. You're just not meeting that part of the Sefer. You want to avoid the mistake that fellow that I heard talking in one of the shuls in this neighborhood made, Rachman Litzlan. I don't know what his status is. Okay.
The last point that you made just sort of rung a bell for me that, you know, that your vision basically, you know, starts with your eyes and your nerves. So it comes to a place like here, but deeper down, and then it also travels like this, and it comes to your temporal lobe in the back of the ear. So in other words, your visual pathways where you take information goes along.
Actually, to work that way.
Same pathway.
That's interesting. I'm sure that factors in somehow. It'd be interesting to know how. Okay, we'll move on. Now Rabbi Yochanan says the name of Rabbi Yossi, again expounding a little bit more on the subjects that we saw here. On the parsha of the eagle. Kaldibo vidibo sheyotza mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Any word, anything that comes out of Hashem's mouth, letoiva, meaning any good promise, afilu al tnai, even if he's subject to a condition, loy chozaboy, Hashem will not retract it.
Even if the conditions are met.
Even if it's not met, as we'll see now. Minala, how do we know this? Mi Moshe Rabbeinu. From Moshe Rabbeinu. What did Hashem tell Moshe? Shenema. Hashem tells Moshe. Hashem tells Moshe, Helef mi meni va'ashmide. Leave me, and I'll destroy them, right? About the Jewish people. And I'll make you into an immense nation. Now, did Moshe leave Hashem be? He didn't. He kept on nudging. Right? Now, even though Moshe did daven, so he didn't fulfill the condition. Ubitla, and he annulled the decree. Yet, Hashem nevertheless fulfilled his promise to Moshe, even though it was on condition, and the condition was not met. Shenema.
What condition did Hashem fulfill?
What? No, Hashem told Moshe, I'll make you into an immense nation if you let me destroy them.
But he didn't.
So Moshe didn't let him destroy them, and Hashem still made Moshe into an immense nation, as we'll see now. Let's see.
It's like you're wiping out everything before Moshe.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Hashem told him, if you let me destroy the Jewish people, I'll make you into an immense nation. Moshe did not let him destroy the Jewish people, and Hashem made Moshe into an immense nation nevertheless. Meaning Hashem fulfilled his promise even though the condition that he made wasn't met. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, B'nei Moshe, the children of Moshe, Gershon ve'Eliezer. They were Gershon and Eliezer. Vayu b'nei Eliezer Rechavya Rosh. The children of Eliezer was, well, the head of them was Rechavya. U'b'nei Rechavya Rabu L'malo. And the children of Rechavya multiplied exceedingly. The Tani Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef said, what does it mean that they multiplied exceedingly? Lemalo mishishim riboy. Moshe's descendants multiplied to more than 600,000. How do we know that? Asir revir revir. It's gzera shavet. It says the term revir, multiplication, in two places. Ksiv hacha rabu lemalo. It says about the descendants of Moshe that they multiplied exceedingly. Uksiv hasam, it says elsewhere, this week's parasha. Ubnei Yisrael pou vayishlutzu vayirmu. The Bnei Yisrael were fruitful and they multiplied. Their multiply means that they reached 600,000. The same thing happened to Moshe. Hashem promised Moshe, if you let me destroy them, I'll make you into an immense nation. Moshe did not let Hashem destroy them, and yet Hashem made Moshe into an immense nation. Now, somebody might be wondering, that we learned recently, exactly the opposite. That even when Hashem makes a promise without a condition, it might not be fulfilled if the person's not worthy. Right? We saw that sin can mess up a promise from Hashem even if it was unqualified. Remember, we learned that a few daf ago. How do we reconcile that with our Gemara? I don't know, the way I understand it is that it is a given, like we said earlier, that a person can mess up a promise by a sin. But here the condition wasn't that Moshe will do a mitzvah of some sort or won't sin. It was a technical condition. Meaning, if this and this happens, if it's not rainy tomorrow, I'll do this and this. Right? If I tell a kid, if it's not rainy tomorrow, I'll take you to the store. It's not the same as telling the kid, if you behave nicely, I'll take you to the store. If you behave nicely, you wouldn't want to do it if the kid doesn't behave nicely. But if you say, if it's not rainy tomorrow, I'll take you to the store. If the next day it does rain, you might decide to do it anyways. This was more of a technical condition. It wasn't like Hashem was telling Moshe, look, you have a big mitzvah to do. Don't bother Tati while he destroys the Jewish people. Right? It's not what Hashem was telling Moshe. Don't bother Hashem while he destroys the Jewish people. Hashem was telling Moshe, let me destroy them and I'll... It wasn't the mitzvah here. It wasn't an issue of merit. Moshe didn't keep the condition, but Hashem said at the end of the day, I let it out of my mouth and I'm going to make you into an immense nation. Lamaisa, you're no less deserving than when I promised it. I'll grant it. Okay.
Question?
Begin.
Why do we say that Moshe's offspring is a separate nation?
Not separate, but that he had as many descendants as the Jewish people were at the time.
But it says a goy, like it's a separate nation.
No, that's not necessarily a problem. We see that Klal Yisrael themselves are referred to as goyim. Klal Yisrael comprised nations. Each shevet is its own nation. Each family, in a sense, is its own nation. Relatively. Not an inherently different nation.
So the word goy means here, the goy...
A sub-nation. Means a sub-nation.
Means a shevet.
Well, you can term it that way, or just say a sub-nation, a family. Okay, yeah. Okay, let's begin the next piece, just so we can say we turned the page. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Nishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, now listen, here's a surprising statement. Miyoyim Sheboa Kadosh Baruch Hu Es Ha'olam, from the day Hashem created the world, nobody called Hashem Odoi, Master. Avram invented the term. He was the first one who called Hashem Odoi. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, Vayoymer Adonai Bamo Eda Ki Iroshena. That was the first time the name Odoi, Adnus, was used. Right. So that's the first time this term was used. What's that? It's just Rabbi Yochanan in the name of his Rebbe. So we're bringing a lot of statements of Rabbi Yochanan in the name of his Rebbe. Now, if you want to take this technically, it's not that surprising because we know that there were many great people before Avraham Avinu, who certainly related to Hashem as the master of the world, right? Adam, Noach, Shem, Mesushelach, Chanoich, Eiver, plenty of great people. But we're saying that the name Adnus, it was Yudkei Vavkei, right? The name Adnus was first innovated by Avraham Avinu.
Which one, Yudkei Vavkei?
Yudkei Vavkei was always in use.
So which one?
But Avraham innovated Aleph Dalet. Omar Rav, now that's considered a big merit. We'll explain that Bezos Hashem next time, Lineda. Rav just concludes this and says, Av Daniel loinene ele bishvil Avram. This was a big schus. And Daniel, when he was davening for the restoration of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, he was answered in this schus of Avram Avinu. Shenemar, as it says in the Apostle, Vato shma eloheinu al tfilas avdecho ve'el tachanuno. And now, Hashem, hearken to the tfilah of your servant and to his pleas. Ve'er panecho al mikdoshcha ha-shomeim leman adonai. And shine your face on your desolate mikdash for the sake of Adoi Hashem, Shem Adnus. Now a minute, he was talking to Hashem. Why is he saying shine your face on your mikdash for the sake of Hashem? He should say Lamancha, for your sake, mi boyile. He should have said. So rather, but he started off with the second person. Hayar panecha mikdashcha Hashem. Shine your face on your desolate mikdash for the sake of Hashem. Eloman Avram shekracha Odin. Actually, what he meant to do was he meant in the merit of the name Adnus that was innovated by Avram Avinu. That's what he was doing there. Telling Hashem, yes, shine your face upon us in the merit of Avram Avinu who innovated the name Adnus. Now, what the significance of this is, we'll see Blineder next time. Thank you.